Welcome to DCU's Teaching Enhancement Unit Podcasts, an audio discovery series for teaching and learning in higher education. Hello, my name is Lisa Donaldson, and welcome to another episode in DCU's Teaching Enhancement Unit Podcasts called A Discovery Series for Teaching and Learning in Higher Education. This podcast is part of the learning design theme, and I would like to welcome Claire Gormley to talk with me today, who has great expertise in this area. Let me start, Claire, by asking you just to introduce yourself.
Thanks for the invitation, Lisa. It's lovely to be here. So I'm an academic developer with the Teaching Enhancement Unit at DCU, where I've been since 2014 now, coming up to 7 years almost. So overall, you could say that my role is to support staff who are interested in enhancing their teaching practice in some way. Specifically, what that means is that a major part of my role would be around facilitating learning design sessions with staff, particularly those who are interested in moving to more blended or online approaches. I also organise practice sharing events such as the Sipping Point, also involved in co-facilitating peer observations, and I engage in different kinds of educational research with staff members. For example, would have conducted research in the past in relation to wearable camera in lab teaching, more recently working with colleagues around video and audio-based feedback, and also working with staff in relation to various community-building initiatives that are underway. So obviously there's other aspects to the academic developer role, such as contributing to the design and development of various online courses and MOOCs, leading various projects, and obviously as well running workshops and around aspects of teaching enhancement on demand as requested by staff.
Great, thank you. So as you say, learning design has been a big part of your role to date. Can you just tell us a little bit about how would you define learning design and perhaps a little bit around why is it important?
Okay, what I would say overall is that learning design is very much about taking an intentional approach to a particular course or program to help the student achieve the desired learning outcomes. Learning design is very much about taking an activity focus rather than a content focus, which you might actually see is typical in situations where you don't have much consideration of learning design. So that could be the kind of situation where somebody is, for example, using their VLE page as more of a repository of information. And so you might potentially see in there a long list of documents and PDFs and PowerPoints and things like that, but they're not particularly present to the student in a way to help them necessarily achieve the learning outcomes. And the end result of it can be that you can end up with this scroll list of death, which is a little bit intimidating or overwhelming to students potentially. Whereas if you take a more learning design centred approach, you're very much focusing on the activities that you're asking students to engage with in order to achieve the learning outcomes.
Okay, that's great. So if you were to take this more intentional approach to learning design, are there frameworks that can help support that?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no shortage of models and frameworks out there to help you think about your learning designs. And just to mention a few of them, one example that some of your listeners might have come across before is something called the 3E framework, which is centered on a sort of continuum of technology adoption ranging from enhance, extend to empower. So just to explain a little bit about what I mean there, an enhanced version or an enhanced, if you like, implementation of the 3E framework is where somebody is simply adopting a technology to support students and enhance their self-direction. So that might be a situation where, you know, instead of passing around a printed handout on a quiz, they develop an online quiz of some kind. If you want to extend that, that might be where a lecturer is integrating further use of technology to facilitate both individual and collaborative learning and assessment. And it usually means that when you're moving up the scale, so to speak, you're giving more choice and control to the student. So in that case, you might be offering more quizzes, you might be giving them a choice about what quizzes they're undertaking, and as a lecturer, you might be giving them more detailed feedback. When you're moving to the very upper end of that continuum, towards the empower end, that's really where you're talking about somebody using a very developed use of technology, that potentially reflects higher order thinking and all reflects the kind of professional worlds that students will eventually occupy. And that would be a situation where, still using that quiz metaphor, would be where instead of you creating the quizzes as the lecturer, you're actually getting the students to generate the quizzes and questions and contribute to a formative assessment bank in some way. So that's 3E. That's only one that people might have heard of. There's something else not a million miles away from that called the SAMR model, which again, uses a lens of moving from no technology towards more transformative uses of technology. So what the SAMR model means is SAMR stands for a substitution, augmentation, modification and redefinition. So what we might have seen, for example, a lot of activity, particularly in response to the pivot online, that might have very much focused on the substitution end of the model, so to speak. It was about people trying to quickly find an approach that was going to replace their traditional classroom-based lecture or tutorial. But, you know, more, if you like, in-depth interpretations of that model would steer people towards more creative tasks that may not have actually indeed previously been possible without the use of technology. So that's another one. It's not a million miles away from the 3E framework, I would say. And there's other models and frameworks out there that you might have heard of. Universal Design for Learning, or UDL. And that's where you're using a set of principles for curriculum development that offers all students, no matter what their background and no matter what their abilities are, you're offering them equal opportunities to learn. So that might manifest itself through multiple means of expression, engagement and representation. So there's, you know, that's only just really, really tip of the iceberg stuff in terms of models that people might have heard of. But the one we're, I suppose, particularly using and advocating at DCU is the ABC Learning Design Framework.
Yes, ABC. And can you just take us through a little bit about what it is and how it works?
Okay, sure. Well, ABC is very much a team-based curriculum design approach. The idea of it very much is, and it has evolved, if you like, in recent years, but in its original incarnation, what it was originally intended was as a 90-minute workshop where teams of staff would come together, would sit around tables, would use very sort of non-digital approaches ranging from cards, posters, blue tack, whatever, to consider and think about potential learning designs. So it was used a very structured series of activities, you could say, a structured and very tightly timed series of activities to help people think about how they might design or redesign a module or indeed a program. Now, what it is, there are a number of different aspects to it, but sort of central to that particular framework is something called the six learning types, which is very much rooted in the work of Diana Laurie-Lauer and the conversational framework. What the six learning types attempt to do is to distill a lot of complex learning theory into a format and an approach that people can immediately, if you like, identify with and that resonates with them, regardless of whether or not they have any history or prior knowledge of learning design. And they may not indeed have done any prior learning or qualifications in education or in teaching and learning. In a sense, what's so appealing about that particular approach is that using the six learning types, these are very accessible categories that people can relate with and that they can think about in terms of their potential designs. And it's very much about taking, if you like, a pedagogy first approach rather than leading with the technology there. And just to explain what those six learning types, since I mentioned them, are, there are acquisition, discussion, collaboration, practice, investigation, and production. Hopefully I've said the six of them there.
And could you give an example of what types of learning activities might fall under those categories?
Sure. Okay, so there are six learning types, and just to very briefly explain what each one of those is in turn now and give you some examples under each heading. The acquisition learning type is basically any kind of an activity where you're asking the student to read or watch or listen to something in arguably quite a passive way. You're asking them to acquire certain information, certain facts and figures and, if you like, foundational concepts. So a lecture, certainly in its perhaps most traditional form, would be a very common form of acquisition learning in higher education. Other activities, though, particularly as you're moving towards more hybrid or blended kind of approaches, there, you know, the lecture isn't necessarily the only show in town. There's things like video. There's things, obviously, the classics like reading books, chapters that you might have in there. And there's a whole variety of approaches for, if you like, enacting acquisition learning in a particular context. So that one, that's acquisition, acquiring. Discussion, as the name suggests, is really all about giving opportunity for dialogue and conversation. So it's any kind of learning activity that you're thinking of that allows your students to share their perspectives, maybe engage in some kind of debate or discussion with others. Very common example of that, obviously, in a small group tutorial that would be done verbally in a face-to-face situation, but online you could have an online discussion forum. That would be a very typical and common form of discussion. Collaboration sounds very similar to discussion, but there is one sort of key differentiator. Under the learning types model, collaboration really means any kind of an activity where you're asking your students to work together to build a joint output of some kind. So if about a discussion is just where they might be having a conversation, shooting the breeze, exchanging views, shall we say. In collaboration, you're asking them to negotiate and work together to build something that is probably going to be assessed. A group presentation, for example, is a very common form of a collaborative project. Okay, then the other ones that I might just quickly go through as well. Practice, that's really any opportunity where you're given, or any kind of learning activity where you're giving students a chance to try something out and also giving them an opportunity to receive feedback on it. That feedback could be automated feedback, it could be feedback from you as the lecturer, it could be feedback from their peers, but it's any situation where you're giving the student a chance to apply their learning and receive some kind of feedback on it. Okay, another one is called investigation, and that's really very typical of problem-based or case-based kind of learning, but it's essentially any kind of an activity where you're setting your students a problem or a question of some kind that you want them to go off and research and find the answers to. A collaborative literature review could be a typical example of an investigative task, but needn't necessarily be something that people do with others. They could do it on their own as well. Could be something as simple as asking your students to engage in a web search activity of some kind. And then lastly, then the sixth one is production, and that's very tightly linked to how you're going to assess people, because I would say production is very much about where you're asking students to produce something that demonstrates that they've achieved the learning outcomes. So it's usually something that you're going to assess. So obviously that's a huge list of potential activities there. It could be anything, produce a reflection, produce a video, produce a report of some kind. There's a very long list there.
Great. So the framework, the ABC framework, supports you in putting different combinations of those elements together to most effectively meet the learning outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in many cases, it's about showing people different ideas for enabling different learning types. So somebody might not have thought about activities that might help to enable collaboration or discussion. They might have had come, if you like, to the workshop with one particular idea of how discussion could be enacted. But what the framework does through giving them these six learning types as a sort of lens to think about how they might do things, it's also hopefully raising their awareness of technologies and activities that can potentially put those types into action.
Okay, great, thank you. So that certainly gives a great deal of detail on the framework itself. So if staff wanted to get involved and were interested in considering the ABC framework as a mechanism to re-examine their programs, what do they do? How do they get more information?
Okay, well, the first thing I would say is if you're a DCU staff member, what I'd recommend you do is you go to the dcu.ie/TEU website, right? Because there, what you'll find there when you go to the TEU area of the DCU website, there is a category called Learning Design. And under that menu, you'll see a page which really describes much of what I've said there, but also gives you more information on what ABC is all about. So I would recommend that you start there. And also, while you're in that website, you'll notice that there's a case studies area as well, and there'll be some specific examples of how various program teams at DCU have put their learning from ABC workshops into practice. If you check out a number of those case studies, that'll give you some ideas for what people have done. And that's the same area. And if you're not a DCU staff member, what I'd suggest is that you go to a website called abc-ld.org. And that is the hub of the ABC to VLE Erasmus Plus project. And what's, I suppose, significant about that is, you know, once you go there, you'll find a whole raft of case studies, toolkits, and background information, not just from DCU, but from the 13 partners involved in that project that you can potentially explore. There's also actually a very useful section on how different institutions have developed an online version of ABC. So that might be interested to explore. So I'd say there should be plenty to browse through and check out under those resources. But certainly, if you have any questions, you can feel free to email me at claire.gormley@dcu.ie.
That's great, Claire. Thanks so much for that. And many thanks for sharing your expertise this morning. We'll call it a day there and just say thanks and goodbye.
You're very welcome.